truth.
Millions of people around the world marching in circles for years, calling for an end to these imperial wars. These current ones being based on the story of 9/11, a story that doesn't add up. But we see the mainstream anti-war organizations for years, over 6 years now, avoiding addressing the truth about 9/11. This story that is the foundational myth of the war on terror, a war that we have been promised will last for our lifetimes, will last at least 100 years. We're smashing the social taboo against talking about the truth of 9/11. And we're making so much headway, we're making so much progress. The response from the people trying to stand in the way of exposing the truth about 9/11, the corporate media, the disinformationists, the richest members in Congress on down, the response is desperate. A desperate attempt to smear people advocating for truth and justice for 9/11 as terrorists. Why do you think that is? Why do you think such an effort is put into avoiding this topic? There's a reason. And we are smashing the social taboo. If you're a logical person and you've looked into 9/11 at all, you know it's a big story that doesn't add up, and you know that the war on terror is based on it. So why don't you join us? You're not alone if you join us, because we're spearheading a movement that is spreading around the world. And you can go to truthaction.org right now and check it out. We observe International Days of Truth Action on the 11th day of every month, meaning people all over the world are taking action at the same time, together, on the 11th, and we're not stopping until we get justice. And in the 10 months that we've been doing this together, we've spread around the world. And we keep spreading. Scotland is joining us. We've been hearing from Estonia. We've added a whole bunch of new American action networks, groups that are taking action every 11th in the U.S. this week. So if you want to stop marching in circles and wasting your breath yelling about ending the war but not addressing what it's based on, if you want to get effective, you'll get over your hang-ups. You'll help us smash the taboos. You'll join us, and you'll get behind 9/11 truth. Another thing that we're doing, starting just this week, I mentioned it briefly on Monday night's show, and on Friday night's show, we're going to be focusing intensively on this, but we're going to start removing our economic support from the people who sponsor these slanders and smears against truth activists. And we've got that rolling already at 911blacklist.org. It's a new project by Visibility911.com in conjunction with TruthAction.org. On Friday night show, Michael Woolsey will be joining me to tell you all about it. I recommend that you go there right now and get involved right away. Check out what we've got up there already and start taking action along these lines. And we need everyone's input, too, and the best ways to go about that. But this is going to be a clearinghouse and a focus point, a home base, for hitting them where it hurts, right in the money. It's about time. And that's what we do in the truth movement. We take these opportunities, these really horrible things that are happening, and we take them and use it as an opportunity to turn it around and shine the light. We meet these lies head on in the light of day and confront them. We don't scurry away. Tonight we're going to be joined again by Nicholas Levice. Nick joined us a few weeks ago, and I want to have him back on the show every couple of weeks, at least once a month, regularly, because Nick is a walking encyclopedia of knowledge about 9/11. Nick's a co-founder of 911truth.org. He's a co-author of the top 40 reasons to doubt the official story of September 11th. That was put up years ago at 911truth.org. We have it linked to truthaction.org on our 911truth 101 page. And we just thought it would be a good idea to start going through this list, the top 40 reasons. There's 1,001 pieces of evidence in our case. We have a very solid case for 9/11 truth. And, you know, in recent years, the topic of the demolitions, the obvious demolitions of the World Trade Center, have really taken a hold in the movement and just, you know, been at the forefront of, the forefront topic, people pushing for the truth. And a lot of other evidence and parts of this story have been pushed to the background because of that. And Nick is the person to talk to refresh and review these, seemingly endless lists of the pieces of evidence, circumstantial and otherwise, that build up our case for 9/11 truth. So, let's see if we've got Nick on the line. Let's bring him on the show. Hey, Nick, how's it going, man?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you could join us again.
You're really too kind once again to, I'm just your local contrarian using the available means of education to do my best to understand what's going on and maybe help others do that as well.
Cool. Well, I really enjoyed our last two shows together, and like I said, you really are. You're a walking encyclopedia of information, and it's something I want to do on this show, is just get out some more information. Let's refresh and review, and we started going through this list of the top 40 reasons to doubt the official story, and we covered them so well, I think we got through the first one.
Yeah, well,
in two shows, the chain of command, which is definitely worth reviewing. Before we get into this stuff, like into these reasons, and I want to say, if you want to call into the show and you want to talk to me and Nick, or if you've got an action report, if you've been taking action for 9/11 truth, or if you've got some good ideas for us doing so, please stay on topic, but we welcome your calls on this show. We'd love to talk to you. Call in at 888-202 1984. So, Nick, what do you think of this relapse to the truth equals terror theme that's been spread around vigorously recently by all different levels of our opponents?
Well, I don't think it really comes as a surprise.
No, it's not a surprise. When we've been dealing with this since pretty much just right after 9/11, you know, going back to Bush's you're either with us or against us.
Yes, I think pretty much from the beginning there was this idea that anyone who questioned the story of 9/11, or at the beginning, whoever questioned what was happening after 9/11, the reaction to it, was pretty much treated as one of them, a helper of the terrorists.
But at that point, they weren't specifically focusing on us.
It got there pretty quickly. If you remember, Bush delivered that speech in November 2001, I believe.
The one about not tolerating outrageous.
Right. We cannot tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories that try to shift the blame away from the perpetrators and blame the victim.
Yeah, they did get to that pretty quickly. And just for those who don't know,
he was really projecting effectively since the outrageous conspiracy theory was his own from the beginning.
Right, sure. And more recently, for those who don't know, what we're talking about is a specific focus on activists and advocates for 9/11 truth. On Monday night's show, we were joined by Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, AE911truth.org. And recently, in a special hearing in Congress, overseen by Jane Harman, a man from the Wiesenthal Center included Richard's website, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, in the midst of all these radical extremist jihadi sites trying to make this connection there. And a number of other 9/11 truth sites were included as well. And then we've seen this parroted by the corporate media talking heads like Glenn Beck on CNN, Bill Riley, of course. And we've seen it on other levels, too, where the disinformationists who flood YouTube with videos that try to suck people into the twisted idea that no planes were present in New York City, and who are simultaneously flooding YouTube with attack videos on 9/11 truth activists, threatening them, stalking them, but also very specifically labeling them as Al-Qaeda cell members. So this is happening on all different levels, and it seems to be, you know, a fairly coordinated push to refresh this theme.
If you go on the White House site, it's been up for a couple of years, there is, do a search for the term conspiracy theory at whitehouse.gov, and you'll find a series of official statements from the White House explaining how terrorism arises. And terrorism arises because people have a mistaken notion of the world rooted in conspiracy theories. So that generates the hatred that people feel against the United States, because, you see, you couldn't really think that the United States military or any aspect of the United States government is doing anything evil in the world. That would be a conspiracy theory by definition in this world where the term has been so thoroughly corrupted and used as a weapon constantly. Nobody could be thinking that the United States has anything other than the best interests, apparently, of the Middle Eastern countries in mind. So people pick up on these dreadful conspiracy theories, they feel hatred, and, you know, this is what causes them to blame others for their problems, and what causes terrorism, ultimately. And it's made a comeback recently, as you say. Curiously, this idea, as you point out, has made a comeback on the Internet amongst these anonymous disruptor characters, whoever they are, with these videos, as you say. So associating 9/11 truth activists and researchers with Al-Qaeda, and saying, you know, efforts like ours are Al-Qaeda and need to be rounded up, calling really for police action and for murder. I would say these are statements to violence. And then at a far higher level, you have the Committee in Congress of Homeland Security, headed by Jane Herman, a Democrat. The Democrats are now in power. Jane Herman is a representative from California who, anything that involves Homeland Security, this also a very corrupt term, she's for the CIA, anything that involves giving money to the so-called intelligence agencies.
Apparently she's really cashing in on a lot of defense contracts.
That's right, that's right. She's a big one in that regard. And the military industrial contractors are very equal opportunity as far as the Democrats or Republicans are concerned. They will spread their money around very liberally to anyone who votes their way. And Jane Herman has a very consistent record there. So she introduced this bill, H.R. 1955, which has passed the House. I haven't checked yet if it's gone through the Senate. Passed the House overwhelmingly with something like 6 votes against.
Just shameful.
The 6 votes against, by the way, include Dennis Kucinich. Ron Paul missed that vote. But 3 Republicans and 3 Democrats found it in them to vote against this bill, and the other 400-odd all went with it.
Let's pick up this topic, 1955 and truth equals terror on the other side. The no-planers are saying the same thing the Bush White House is. We'll be right back. And we're back on Truth Revolution Radio. I'm your host, Cosmos. This is the official broadcast of TruthAction.org. And we're here with Nicholas Labisse. We're counting down the top 40. The top 40 reasons to doubt the official story of September 11th, 2001. A little review. Before we get right back into this, and we'll pick it up with number 2. But we were talking about this truth activist equal terrorist theme that's being pushed on so many different levels. We were talking about how it was being pushed by Harmon in her hearings for this bill, 1955. And just tell the listeners, what's this bill about, and how do you think this, the best way to address this phenomenon is, Nick?
Well, it's a question what the best way to address it is, but first just to describe something about H.R. 1955, which again passed by a vote of 400-6, I believe, the House. Just 6 House members found it in them to vote against it. H.R. 1955 does not specify criminal penalties. It is a first attempt to define a new category of thought crime. H.R. 1955 puts up money for a commission that's going to study the subject that it attempts to define, and the commission's going to come back with legislative recommendations and criminal penalties. And the conditions that it defines are violent radicalization, homegrown terrorism, and ideologically based violence. And the way it defines it is very broad and vague. Ideologically based violence, to quote the text of the bill, is the use, planned use, or threatened use of force or violence by a group or individual to promote the group or individual's political, religious, or social beliefs. Now, that is incredibly broad-based.
Very broad.
What is a group or individual, what are the individual's political, religious or social beliefs. You know, and what is force or violence? You know, again, it's moving towards here. The homegrown terrorism is to intimidate or coerce the United States government, the civilian population of the United States, or any segment thereof in furtherance of political or social objectives. Again, it's not describing any specific acts, intimidate or coerce. That is extremely broad-based. Violent radicalization, an extremist belief system for the purpose of facilitating ideologically based violence to advance political, religious, or social change. It's still talking about violence, but it's not concentrating on acts. It's concentrating on the supposed motivations, and it's dangling this term out there, extremist beliefs. And after passage of H.R. 1955, Jane Harman held hearings on Capitol Hill just last week, in which Mark Weitzman of the Simon Wiesenthal Institute testified. He's the one who presented a slideshow that included screenshots of two sites sandwiched in between Taliban sites and radical Islamist sites. Two sites were architects for 9/11 Truth, which, you know, really it has a strong position, but I don't see where it's an ideological position. And the site of Killtown, and he mentioned 9/11 conspiracies as one of these extremist conspiracy theory ideologies that can promote homegrown terrorism.
And on Monday night, Richard mentioned a couple of other sites too, like Peace Projects and something else too, I forget.
So Harman asked Weitzman as follows. She asked him this question. So this movement develops them into violent killers. She asked about the connection between 9/11 conspiracy theorists and terrorists. And Weitzman says, these people are constructing their own version of reality, full of conspiracy theories, full of doctored videos that will recruit or inflame the emotions. A colleague of his, Bruce Hoffman, of the RAND Corporation, who was also at the hearings, agreed and said that falsehoods and conspiracy theorists have become so ubiquitous and believe that you almost have some sort of parallel truth, and it has become a very effective tool for recruiting people. And the people he is referring to are potential terrorists. So this is what it's come down to. There's never been a real hearing on the open question of 9/11 in front of the Congress, but now there's a hearing about the questioners. At the same time, again, that you know, Bush has renewed and the White House has renewed its push against conspiracy theorists. And at the same time, I guess incidentally, we're supposed to say that the people who have specialized in attacking 9/11 truth activists and researchers are associating all the efforts with terrorism and al-Qaeda. And, you know, I think this is, I don't know if we're exaggerating this because it hasn't, the other shoe hasn't dropped yet. We have yet to hear what this commission, which is being appointed, is going to come up with in terms of further specifying this definition and of coming up with penalties and a course of action. I don't know what kind of re-education or sanctions they're going to recommend or how far it's going to go or whether by the time they've come out with the commission, other events have already overwhelmed it and pushed it much further along.
I don't think we have the luxury of sitting around and waiting to find out what the other foot dropping is going to mean. And I really think that the best way to deal with this stuff is to confront it directly, whether that means legal action, whether that means economic boycotts, massive pressure from you know, from constituents, from you know, potential viewers of the shows that are pushing this thing. You know, we're seeing the same thing pushed on CNN and Fox, and there's other ways to directly counter this too. And
I'm going to read a comment that was made on this issue on an internet board by somebody that's that may be optimistic, but that I find hopeful and inspiring.
Okay.
That who is going to really believe that architects, engineers, family members of victims of September 11th, first responders and concerned citizens are really any kind of domestic security threat? I just don't think this will stick. And the result of that would be that those promoting this will look more fascist and petty themselves. I think that's optimistic. We have a history in this country of purges. We've had the anti-communist witch hunts of the 1950s that were basically taking in anybody who had slightly suspicious or liberal views or anti-imperialist views and trying to paint them as the big communist threat. You know, and that went way far beyond is normally talked about with the McCarthy hearings. I mean, you know, in the end, probably millions of people lost their jobs or had their careers blocked, as teachers, as journalists. And at that time, as civil servants, because of the atmosphere that was going on. Now, we haven't had that that scale today. Today, it's a much more artificial and less heartfelt thing, I believe. I think that's also a function of, in general, people are less heartfelt and more superficial about politics today. They've kind of lost belief in the passion, in really believing these things passionately anyway, which is really disturbing to the forces of reaction.
It does seem really half-hearted and artificial.
Yeah.
We got a break here, and on the other side of this break, we really will get into the top 40.
Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government.
You still think that jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center? Does anybody else see a problem here? If the government has nothing to hide, why are they so afraid to answer a few questions? This story does not add up.
This story does not add up. The official story of 9/11. And it's not just the story of those towers. We've got 1,001 pieces of evidence. Anywhere you look in the official story of 9/11, it just doesn't add up. And our guest tonight is Nicholas Levice. He is a co-founder of 911truth.org and a co-author of The Top 40 Reasons to Doubt the Official Story of September 11th, 2001. Nick was on a couple of weeks ago. He was on for two shows, and we only got through number one. And number one being the AWOL chain of command on the morning of 9/11. Nick went through that pretty thoroughly. I want you to check out the top 40 list for yourself. We've got it linked on our 9/11 Truth 101 page at truthaction.org. You can find it at 911truth.org in the top left corner of the front page. Nick, let's pick this up where we stopped.
All right.
What's number two on the top 40?
Well, I just want to caution that the top 40 is basically an outline. The order perhaps is arbitrary. People can come up with their. It's a list of ideas that have developed within the 9/11 research that lead one to see to think that there was complicity on the day, that there was some form of orchestration, that it wasn't short. An inside job. And
so it's not necessarily in order.
It's a jumping off point. Well, it is in a certain order, yes. That order emphasizes, it begins sort of at the top and sort of at the most open layers of the onion. The first reason being the behavior of the top men in the chain of command on September 11th, which, as we discussed the last time I was on, is tantamount to a coordinated avoidance of their roles as decision makers. It's as though they all went and hid in a hole to avoid responsibility, not to be present during the actual 2 hours of the attack. We're talking about Bush, Rumsfeld, General Myers of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Shelton, who was away. acting chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Winfield of the National Military Command Center arranged not to be on his shift the night before, so the rookie Captain Leidick was in charge in the equivalent of the war room at the Pentagon that was handling the crisis. General Eberhard of the Air Force, head of NORAD, who somehow was incommunicado for 45 minutes after learning of the attack, supposedly because he was driving to the NORAD headquarters at Cheyenne Mountain, which I'm sorry, I do not buy the idea that Eberhard, you know, they don't have a communication line for the guy who's in charge of NORAD, which has been preparing for nuclear war for 60 years.
Yeah.
And they don't have a line of communications for him. His cell phone was cut off while he was in the mountains driving to Cheyenne Mountain for 45 minutes.
So number one on the top 40 list is very damning. We had a completely AWOL chain of command, the whole chain of command.
And that it wasn't gone into in the so-called investigations, which do amount to a cover-up, that only some of these facts were presented in a very disconnected fashion at different points and kind of downplayed as you know, some kind of personal mistake or incompetence, but nobody's held accountable. Eberhard gets promoted to head up NORTHCOM, the Northern Command. Myers gets confirmed as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. As Chiefs of Staff, he'd already been appointed at that point.
And the point being, I think, really, it's like not to just accept this, you know, this overwhelming, coincidental, thoroughly AWOL chain of command, but how about a real investigation into it? What were they really doing? What was really going on?
Right. I think we're seeing the loose end. I think we're seeing the open part of the facilitation from the top. Whatever it was that happened on 9/11, it wasn't the case of Bush, certainly not, I guess, or Cheney or Rumsfeld, you know, directly planning and then coordinating on the day, flying the planes. You know, there's always this debunker fantasy or cartoon version. You know, so you think Bush flew the planes and did this? Ha, 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 you're so stupid. No, no. But what we see for a beginning is that whatever operation is happening, these people are conveniently absent. Then we turn to the issue of air defense and the reaction of the United States military and the civilian authorities who were charged with doing something.
And that's number two. That's number two on this list, on the top 40.
What do we see? You know, now not, you know, overemphasizing what's number two and what order the list is. What do we know about air defense reaction on September 11th? I think for absolutely sure three things are known, are absolutely known, can be concluded, cannot be argued with, and, you know, the debunkers would like to sweep under the rug. Number one is there was a failure to follow the standard operating procedure for a crisis of this kind, for planes going off course, for hijackings, or for that matter, for diverted flights. There was a failure to follow the standard operating procedure as it was coded and as apparently it had been followed in the past, years and in the months before September 11th. There was a failure to do what they were supposed to do in terms of even trying to intercept the planes and following their own rules. Number two, by some amazing coincidence, on the day there was a set of war games that had been scheduled, that were launched on the morning, that happened to include in their scenarios that were being rehearsed every element of the attacks as they happened. And number three, there was a pattern of lying afterwards about the air defense failure, if that is what it was. That is very conspicuous, that even caused the 9/11 Commission to consider recommending criminal charges against NORAD. You had multiple federal agencies come up with different timelines, changing stories that conflicted with each over time that they were never held accountable for, that they upheld for months or even for years at a time, and that do not fit, that directly conflict, such that somebody or all of them must be lying. And this, again, not pursued in the investigation and resolved with the 9/11 Commission simply resolving the revising the timeline of everything that was supposed to have happened in terms of the air defense response, such that all questions resolved, and at worst, all you had was incompetence. But again, they didn't deal with the obvious discrepancies and with the fact that these are more than discrepancies. They're open conflicts between the story of NORAD, the story is told by NORAD, and the story is told by FAA. These timelines do not fit each other and is upheld for years. Again, we're not talking about any misstatements that happened. So we could go through this evolution of the different official stories, the different timelines, and how they demonstrate that there is a cover-up going on.
We could also talk about...
I would recommend, this is done at justicefor911.org, which was the 2004 complaint to the Attorney General of New York State, Elliot Spitzer, who did absolutely nothing with it.
Of course, he's now governor.
And is now governor of New York State, that's right. But the point of which was also to make the case to establish probable cause for a criminal prosecution. Probable cause is the standard that we have to establish to get an investigation in the first place and to, possibly get to indictments. We do not have to show prove anything beyond a shadow of a doubt. We just have to establish that unsolved crimes exist and must be investigated and must be brought before a jury. And that's what that complaint was trying to do at justicefor911.org. If you go there, you'll see a petition on the front page, and then in the upper left corner, you can click to get to the complaint, which goes on, fairly long, many sections.
Do you think you would be able to lay that out in a concise way? I'm also really interested in maybe going over the war games, too, when we get back from this break. And, folks, this is not something we're just talking about. We've had a solid case for years. We're doing something about this. We have a movement for truth and justice that's spreading around the world. And you can check that out at truthaction.org right now. I encourage you to join us. Revolution Radio, broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network. This is the official broadcast of TruthAction.org. And we're talking with our guest, Nicholas Levice. We're going through the top 40 reasons to question, to doubt the official story of 9/11. And Nick has got so much information, we can barely cover one of these points in one show, but we're going to try to get as much in here as we can. We've also got a caller on the line. Nick, if you want to, let's wrap up what you were just saying about building this case, this solid case, and it had to do with the conflicting timelines.
Right. Well, when you look at the air defense on September 11th, you see again that there was a failure to intercept, which does not mean shoot down. It's a reconnaissance function. A failure to even follow the standard procedure. Then there were the conflicting timelines, all the lies, necessarily, because some of them had to be lies, that were told afterwards of the cover-up that was engaged in. And then there was the complete avoidance of the war games issue, that the scenarios for the war games happened to mirror every single thing.
Now, what are the war games? For someone listening who just doesn't know, what's the deal with the war games? There were a whole bunch of them on the morning of September 11th.
Right. Well, September 11th happened to be the day on which a variety of war games, mostly airborne exercises as well as command center exercises, were being had reached their height. These had originally been scheduled for October, as usual. They are usually scheduled in October under the rubric of Global Guardian, which is a general Armageddon scenario that's run and involves strategic commands who are the nuclear forces and NORAD and Space Command and all the branches of Homeland Defense, I guess before it was being called Homeland so often. And amongst the scenarios that were, amongst the exercises and scenarios that were rehearsed on that day, there was Vigilant Guardian, which actually rehearsed hijacking in domestic airspace, multiple hijackings in domestic airspace. There had been planning at this point to have live-fly hijacking exercises where with actual planes pretending to be the hijacked plane in 2002 as of the spring of 2001. But then, again, the war games were rescheduled from October to September, and a variety of plans were adopted, and it appears that amongst them, you know, one thing that has been admitted is that there were hijacking scenarios and that people on air defense at the northeastern sector on the day were looking at first at these diverted airplanes and thinking it's the hijacking exercise. So
how many war games were there that morning?
Oh, it's really unclear, but of the ones involving NORAD, there appear to be four. One is not a war game, but an operation that was announced in advance, Northern Vigilance, that involved sending a lot of air defense assets to the North Pole to meet the Russian maneuvers, Operation Northern Vigilance. Then there was Vigilant Guardian and Vigilant Warrior, about which we've heard very little, but was copped to by Richard Clark in his book, Against All Enemies. He describes how he was in a video conference with General Myers, by the way, making a liar out of Myers, as far as Myers' story is concerned. There's a direct conflict between Clark and Myers, and one of them must be lying, but again, not explored by the commission. Regardless, and then Myers is telling Clark on the morning about how they're in the middle of Vigilant Warrior. Vigilant Guardian, Vigilant Warrior. Vigilant Guardian involves hijacking exercises or defense against multiple hijackings. Vigilant in domestic airspace. Vigilant Warrior involves what? It sounds like red team, blue team.
And a lot of these war games included aspects of that were very similar to the actual attacks.
Yes. At the same time, the CIA is supposedly holding a completely separate exercise that has nothing to do with any of this, and it's only a fire drill. But the scenario is that an airplane is crashing into the offices of the National Reconnaissance Office outside Washington, from which all the satellite surveillance of the world, the U.S. military's satellite surveillance is run out of the offices of the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office. And they were rehearsing a plane crashing into the building. That's an astonishing coincidence at 8:30 in the morning, just as these attacks started. And they end up evacuating the building as part of the exercise, and then they just tell everybody, go home. I wonder who stayed behind. I'd be very interested in hearing that at the National Reconnaissance Office. At the same time, in New York, FEMA is setting up its very large exercise for the next morning, you know, which was Tripod 2, which Giuliani revealed and talked about or admitted to and talked about. Tripod 2 was going to rehearse a biowarfare attack in New York City, a crisis in New York City. So they had a command center ready at Pier 92, which instead of being used for the exercise was used as the command as the emergency command center for New York City after WTC 7 fell. So that base seems to have been covered as well. At the same time, they're holding an exercise at Fort Monmouth base in New Jersey, not so far away from New York. That is basically a lockdown of the base. This base controls presidential communications on behalf of the Secret Service. This one was called Timely Alert 2. So you've got a very interesting set of exercises, and we've seen very little about it. Cynthia McKinney tried to get it out of Myers, and he tripped up over himself. I would recommend an article, because we're not going to have time to go into the whole thing, at 911truth.org under the subdirectory called War Games. So it's a very simple URL, www.911truth.org/wargames. Okay, you go there, and then you'll get a link to this article that goes into how the War Games evidence was developed by a lot of people who I haven't mentioned, who I really should credit here, but there's no time. People like Mike Rupert and his book, Crossing the Rubicon, like Nafis on it, like Paul Thompson, who really gathered all the evidence on Global Guardian, especially, which is the Armageddon scenario. And there's a lot of hair-raising aspects we haven't covered here at all.
So if you want to find out more, go to 911truth.org/wargames and find
right.
out more about this amazing topic.
And it goes
topic.
Into all these aspects, the conflicting timeline and the war games.
Let's see if we can fit a phone call in here. We've got Leo in Massachusetts on the line. Hey, Leo, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. I think there were something like 35 of these games. This is the 35th day of the different types of games. But I think the important part, which I think you're missing, was that there was an altered directive to the chain of command by some kind of executive order back in June or July.
For protocol for dealing with hijacked aircraft?
Yeah, I had to go through Rumsfeld.
Yeah, in fact, we did cover that on the last show that Nick did with us in number one on the top 40 reasons, the AWOL chain of command, and indeed.
That to me is very critical because that alteration changed NORAD's response mechanism radically.
Right. It did so technically. It incorporated the Secretary of State into the decision-making process for intercept of errant aircraft, which he hadn't been in the past. And that was signed on June 1st, 2001. I find it hard to believe that the air defense of the United States would not intercept the plane simply because the Secretary of Defense is AWOL, which he was. This is even according to the 9/11 Commission. Rumsfeld, 2 hours, did nothing as Secretary of Defense. So I find it hard to believe that that was the reason, but I do find this incriminating in other ways. It's weird. It just shows, actually, it's a reason to indict Rumsfeld, I would say. Because he was in the chain of command, and because he made himself scarce, he was even more derelict in his duties. We needed indictment of Donald Rumsfeld, amongst many others, and you know, let's subject them to a legal interrogation, not the kind that he wants to do in Guantanamo with the torture that he approved of. I think just a regular police interrogation, work them over slowly and without anything illegal or any torture. He'll tell us lots of interesting things about September 11th. And that is the hook, I believe. He signed that order, and then he acted irresponsibly on that day. He was completely derelict in his duties on 9/11.
Real quick, Leo, anything else?
Yeah, when Payne Stewart's plane went off, I think there was like a 15-20 minute response time, if you remember correctly. The Gulf?
Payne Stewart is the curious case. It's not really clear because that report, the NTSB report on Payne Stewart, is extremely poorly written, so that you can't tell. I've read that passage 50 times. You can't tell if it's what time they're actually referring to because the plane switches time zones. I believe the response time was 21 minutes and not an hour and 21 minutes, but you cannot tell from that report. It's a very poorly written report. But there were 67 intercept actions between September 2000 and June 2001, about which the 9/11 Commission said nothing. If they were serious about an investigation, they would have started there. They would have looked at those 67 intercept actions right before 9/11, and they didn't look at that at all. So we don't have the raw data, but I bet that would be very interesting to know how fast the reaction times were in the other 67 cases.
Nick Levice, thank you so much for joining us for another info-packed edition of Truth Revolution Radio. I want to have you back on here again soon, and we'll get some more of this top 40 list.
Thank you very much, Cosmo.
All right, we'll be back on Friday night. Talking about the launch of 911blacklist.org. You can check it out right now.